Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And in a moment, Bradley Coates will be on the air with me. He is Hawaii's premier divorce lawyer and has a firm that serves about 30,000 divorces over the last few years. But I wanted to say, as a way of introduction, that every day in June, and this is the most popular wedding month of the year, some 13,000 American couples will say, I do. Well, we'd like to think it's committing to a lifelong relationship that will be full of friendship and joy and love that will carry them forward until their final days on this earth. Except, of course, it doesn't work out that way for most people. The majority of marriages fail, either ending in divorce and separation or devolving into bitterness and dysfunction. And my guest and good friend, Bradley Coates, knows all about this. Welcome to the program, Brad.
Aloha, Diana, and aloha to your listeners. We'll try and avoid the bitterness and dysfunction as much as we can, but that is the issue.
That is the issue. And, of course, I think one of the things that you do so well is that you're an international speaker, and that includes going on cruise ships where you talk about how to avoid divorce. And we'll talk some about that today, but we want to focus in on, is marriage dead? And that's part of your book, Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to guide and survivor's guide to the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues. And your book is now in its fourth edition. It's a wonderful book. Lots of people have benefited from it, Bradley.
Yeah, it's kind of a mouthful to pronounce the title, but it is it's kind of a all-encompassing book. But it really is, you know, I'm a divorce lawyer, but this book that I tried to write was basically a far more wide-ranging survey of love and marriage and romantic relationships and all the various aspects of them in modern-day society. And one of the issues that we're reaching in modern-day society and reaching rather rapidly is whether marriage as an institution is sort of an endangered species altogether. So that's kind of what I'll be talking about today. You can prepare your listeners for that.
Yes, and we may tease a little bit about the next show we plan on doing together. You've been a guest on this program, Love, Lust, and Laughter, I would probably say 5 times, or maybe 6, over the last almost 5 years.
Yeah, I would say so.
And then,
when you used to be in Hawaii.
I know. And then I had an actual radio studio, and we reached all of the neighboring islands. We were broadcasting out of Honolulu. And, I contacted you in 1999, right after the first edition of your book was published. And I said, I'd really like to interview you about this book. And you have never been shy and always the supreme marketer. So, and then we became friends, so it was just a lovely connection.
Yeah, no, it's been good. It's hopefully been good for a lot of your listeners and my clients we've had a good time doing it, but it's a tough subject to talk about. You and I do it probably more deftly than most.
Well, I hope so. You have a section toward the end of your book, Is Marriage Dead? And you have a lot of information about this, statistics, looking at egalitarian relationships, the demographic shifts that have occurred, some other studies made by Mather and Lavery, and then you list your key marriage killer factors. So that's a lot to talk about, and we will. And if there's time, I want to talk about, so what are the ingredients of a healthy, lasting relationship? And when you go on cruises, this is what you talk about in part, don't you?
Yeah, nobody really wants to hear about divorce on the Love Boat, where I lecture for Princess Cruises going around the world. So I try to keep it a little more upbeat. And, you know, and there are ways to certainly try and bulletproof your marriage and improve it. But you've also got to realize that we're swimming against a kind of a strong outgoing tide as far as, the viability of marriage as an institution altogether in this new 21st century. It's a little shocking. And, as you mentioned, this is the fourth edition of this book, and I'd written three editions of it without really even understanding how dramatic this is getting. But when I did the fourth edition, I had the benefit of the 2010 census, and it turns out there's been a sharp and severe decline in the rate of people entering into marriage at all since about 2004, 2006, and continuing to the present time. These last 10 years or so have been a sudden plummeting in the marriage rates. Divorce rates seem to be consistent, but people have stopped getting married. I mean, obviously, plenty of people do. Let's hope that these 30,000 young brides and grooms-to-be
well,
in June.
Apparently it's about 13,000 American couples say I do. So this is every year in the United States, or maybe it's every June.
Every June, I think is what you said, but
I misheard
the number though. So people are still getting married, but they're getting married in far fewer, percentage-wise, far fewer marriages than there used to be. I mean, from the 1960s. Estimated levels of marriage were around 80% in most surveys, and it was more it was young adults, age 20, 23, 24, 25, up to the mid 30s that were getting married, and now that's being postponed. It's being chucked all together. There's a lot of different factors that are going on, but it is definitely changing. Married couples now, as of, again, this 2010 census, represent only about 48% of all U.S. households, compared to, again, 75% as recently as 1972. So, for the first time in American history, you've got more unmarried American adults than you have married American adults in our country, which is, a real shock and a real reshaper of society, because, then the question is what happens to family structures and kids and kids being raised by single parents, as opposed to dual role models of a male and a female in the house. Now there's a lot of single parenting. I mean, it's changing the whole program, and it's changing everything for the participants themselves.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, the participants themselves. I mean, you mention in your book that marriages have become much more egalitarian these days, and that's for sure. I see it in my private practice. And including a lot of the couples that are struggling to stay married. And talk about the egalitarian and marriages and that they need each other less and that sort of thing.
Well, it used to be the old model, the Donna Reed kind of Leave It to Beaver TV shows that I grew up watching, where we're a standard male breadwinner, female homemaker kind of a marriage. That that has really gone the way of Leave It to Beaver. Now you've got what sociologists are calling egalitarian marriages, where basically modern husbands and wives often have their own jobs and incomes, share decision-making power equally, allocate housekeeping and child care duties more equitably, and basically, you've got the big changes is for the Wahinis. Wahini obviously being Hawaiian for women. Women's contribution to family income has gone in the last couple decades. It's gone up from about 20% to now well over 32-33%, which is a huge change. And a lot of times the women are out earning the men altogether. So the question is, where does that lead? And and it's great to see spouses being truly equal. But you've got to think of what the ripple effect of that is. In the good old days, whenever those were, the Leave It to Beaver time, many spouses needed to stay married due to financial, social, or other other constraints. Nowadays, Everybody's earning their own money. A lot of times the women are carrying more than their share of the weight and are sometimes getting more and more dissatisfied with that role and in a position really where, you know, they anybody basically, either husband or wife, but the real change is for the wives. They can now suddenly cut and run from their relationship whenever they feel like it, instead of being tied to it, you know, and having to stay in a miserable marriage because that was where the support was coming from. So that's changed everything. I mean, we've talked before about, you know, women's roles in society having grown so substantially of late. It's been happening for the last 15, 20 years. You know, more advanced degrees, higher earning, you know, more college graduates. I mean, really what's happening is the women are outdistancing the men. So not only have they pulled equal to men, but in some ways, this sort of trend for women being ascendant has turned into women being, you know, somewhat dissatisfied.
They know they have options.
They don't got to stay married if they don't want to. That's exactly right.
Yeah. You talked in a previous show we did quite a few months ago about when we had the recession, a lot of the male, typical male jobs, construction and that sort of thing, went away. And so men had a harder time finding work than women. Go ahead.
As of 2008, that was where it got whacked. I mean, you know, women that are, you know, in the healthcare professions, which continued to be strong, in many of the areas that the women are involved, those areas continue to be high employment, whereas the traditionally male construction, factory, industrial kinds of jobs. We all know what's happened with outsourcing, and you know those jobs have gotten hammered. And in the construction slowdown, that you know, basically when real estate tanked in 2008, you had a lot of guys that, you know, hard hat guys that, you know, had no job site to go to because their construction was frozen. So. It's been a particularly big problem. It's coming back now, obviously, but it's been a particularly big problem for the last few years.
Right, and enough of a problem that the damage was done in many relationships.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. it's been pretty clear for quite a long time that as far as the actual egalitarianness is that a word? Egalitarianness of the actual. Home care, child care, household chores, those kind of things, theoretically what was going to happen was, guys were going to pick up the slack when their wives went to work. But realistically what's happened is that, you know, the statistics that I've got are the average working woman spends about 102 minutes a day caring for her family, and men about 48 minutes. In fact, 38% of all men globally.
Wow, 102 minutes versus 38 minutes?
Yeah, 48 minutes.
48 minutes, okay.
And then what I was, the 38...
So it's not, 38 it's not very egalitarian then.
Not as egalitarian. I mean, it's better than it used to be, but it certainly is not, you know, it ain't even Steven. And globally, 38% of men don't do chores at all. And as we've seen in some cultures, this radical Islam thing, they just really want to send women back to the Stone Age, and they're not going to do anything except for boss women around. So what that's led to. I'm not going to get into various religious cultures, but, you know, coming back to the United States, 36% of all women surveyed said they would not marry their same husbands again, and only 12% of married men said they'd pick the wrong wife. So the women are dissatisfied in a higher percentage.
Yeah. And
that's led to more statistics. 30% of American women who are currently married say they don't intend to be with the man they're with 5 years from now. And 51% of all American women are now living single as of about, like I say, this 2006 time frame when it started to slide. So women are deliberately choosing to live single rather than to be married, because marriage has been a bad deal for them, you know, now that they're on an equal footing.
And I believe this is especially true for women over 60. And they often initiate the divorce, and then they have no desire to remarry. And then, of course, the older the woman gets, the more likely, if she picks a partner that is her age or a bit older, she doesn't want to face caretaking, you know,
yeah.
should her husband get sick.
Well, and you're exactly right. All across the country, about two-thirds of the time when there's a divorce being filed, it's the woman who's filing it.
Only about a third of the time,
Only about a third of all divorces are actually filed by the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting statistic in and of itself.
It really is. Expand on that a little bit, Brad. I think that's fascinating.
Well, I think the reality of it is that you know, women have higher standards. I mean, I probably am going to irritate some of your male listeners, but I mean, what you know, a guy I've probably done in the Coates and Frye firm here in Honolulu, I've probably done somewhere in the range of 20 to 25,000 divorces over about a 35-year period. So I'm not just pulling these statistics out of thin air. I mean, I've got a pretty good sense of what really happens. And I can tell you that a guy is not likely to file for divorce unless he's got some other woman waiting in the wings. I mean, a guy will file for a divorce as an outgrowth of an extramarital relationship that he's suddenly going to go marry the outside woman.
That's right.
And otherwise, a guy won't get off his lazy butt. And, you know, I mean, basically, as long as a guy's in a marriage, even if he's, you know, not really speaking all that much to his wife, he's coming home, he's sitting in his lazy boy lounger watching sports channels on TV. But as long as somebody's plopping a TV dinner down in front of him, you know, he's basically content. Whereas women have this funny little component called communication. whatever the heck that is, where they actually want to have a relationship, and if they're not, and if it's, that's not being met, you know, they're not satisfied. So, like I say, the women will actually file for divorce for what I call the right reasons. You know, they want something mm-hmm. better out of life. You know, guys file for kind of the wrong reasons. The statistics are horrible, by the way, for guys who leave a wife to go with a girlfriend, marry her, and then, you know, then the chances of that marriage actually lasting are usually pretty slim. So it's not really recommended, but it sure is popular.
Sure is popular, and some of these guys will marry somebody much younger, have another child with her, and then that often is disastrous, too, because he maybe figures he didn't sign up for being a father again, or and then they don't have much in common if there's a great age discrepancy. They don't like the same music. They don't all of that. You must have seen this in your practice.
A time or two.
Yes.
Yeah. So what you've got is this sort of, you know, women on a sort of an ascendant track. And
mm-hmm.
being more dissatisfied and more likely to act on it than men are to act on their dissatisfaction. And so, and women have always been this way. I mean, when you think about it, you know, women have got groups of other women that they bond with over time and consistently, whether it be junior league or PTA or book clubs or, you know, garden clubs. Women have all kinds of different linkages with their fellow females, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
whereas guys
mm-hmm.
don't do that. Guys, their friendships oftentimes are surrounded, all about whoever they're surrounded by in their work environment. You know, those are their buds, or, you know, it starts from the high school and college. You know, it's their teammates on sports teams or something. I mean, other than those linkages, you don't see guys calling up other guys and saying, hey, let's get together and discuss the latest book we read. So women have other support systems later in life that they're perfectly satisfied with, and they don't have to pick up after some guy. Whereas guys, frankly, guys without women are in deep kimchi because statistics have shown that unmarried guys don't live as long. They're not healthy. They don't, you know, they're not happy. They're, you know, even more suicidal. I mean, it's crazy the ripple effects of this. Guys need women more than women need men is the conclusion that I'm coming to.
Yeah, I think that's true. And there was even a recent study that showed that widowers remarried way sooner than widows.
Oh,
that
yeah,
they
yeah,
just
no
did
question.
Not want to be alone. And,
widowers and divorced guys remarry faster than divorced women, much faster.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Whereas women say, you know, this isn't so bad. I can be alone. I can have my space. I sort of like not having demands put on me. Some women are saying that.
It's a it's definitely a trend that is continuing, and there's other factors besides liberated women that are contributing to it. You know, I mean, we can go through a sort of a laundry list of them. The fact that we've got this gerontology gap of prolonged lifespans now, where it becomes virtually impossible to expect anyone mate to fulfill all the multitudinous and vastly expanded functions which we've now come to expect of your spouse over the course of what have become radically expanded lifetimes. I mean, in the 19th century, folks only lived to be about 50. You raise the kids and you drop dead. Now with on average lifespans for men of 70 and women 75, excuse me, and women of 80, that may call for a different partner for every different stage of an elongated lifespan. And people that have maybe ended their first marriage in divorce and then find a second relationship, that second relationship doesn't necessarily become a second marriage. They just, they shack up together. Women don't want to get remarried because they lose their alimony from their first marriage. There's their social security benefits. There's all kinds of reasons why people, tend to cohabit rather than actually marry. Even if they do link up with somebody of the opposite sex, it's oftentimes more of a cohabitation shacking up deal than it is a full blown remarriage. So that's another factor to contribute to the overall decline of marriage.
Absolutely. It's sort of a logical decision. And you talk in your book also about the increase in
Civil unions?
Civil unions, yes.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. You talk about the rise of civil unions. Touch on this the last time you were on the program, but I think we need to repeat it because we have new listeners all the time.
Well, and there's new law all the time. I mean,
yes,
for a while, yeah, exactly. I mean, frankly, that's the only people that seem to want to get married anymore.
Isn't that ironic?
Homosexuals, yeah, because. What you had really was a period where, of course, gays couldn't marry at all, and then the interim kind of deal was a lot of states said, well, we'll allow civil unions, we won't allow gay marriage per se, but we'll allow civil unions, which was kind of nibbling around the edges of it. So a lot of states, including Hawaii, enacted civil union laws, which made for an alternate linkage that was not a marriage but was actually a civil union. And those are still on the books in a lot of places. So you now have, and again, we're talking about why is marriage declining. Now you have an alternate institution that you can enter into, called a civil union, which is not a marriage but is some kind of a linkage. I mean, we never had that before. We never had an alternative to marriage that was officially sanctioned. It was always either you were married or you were shacking up. Now you can be domestically partnered, and that's actually dying out because really now that you've got gay marriage becoming really recognized, this is all happening very fast as the whole world knows.
Yes.
But now we're back into marriage being available to gay couples, and they're probably the only group that has for whom marriage is on the rise.
I think that's right, and they're entering it enthusiastically. It was denied to them for so many years, and they couldn't have medical insurance or as a couple, and now they can have all of the benefits of marriage that, at least in some states, it's not all states.
Yeah, health insurance, each other's pension, entitlement to benefits. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff, yeah. But a lot of that was becoming available under civil unions, too. So it's really... like I say, there's alternate institutions that are available. There's both men and women, but especially women not wanting to enter into it. There's a high divorce rate, which causes people to blow out of first marriages and enter into some secondary relationship that may fall short of being a marriage. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's the overall decline of religion in many, if not most, people's religious affiliations across the board in America. And historically, marriage is essentially a religious institution. So there's all kinds of factors that are at work here, but the end result is fewer and fewer people getting married. at cocktail parties, which I occasionally attend, everybody's always teasing the divorce lawyer. You know, well, how's the divorce business? You know, frankly, the divorce business is pretty steady. I mean, that hasn't changed in the 35 sure. years I've been a practicing divorce lawyer. You know, people are consistently getting divorced. We've got full employment on the divorce end. What's changing is the marriage end. There's nobody's coming in the front end of the chute instead of the uh-huh. back end. So that's where, I mean, I'm old enough and, you know, that I'm now, they're going to put me out to pasture one of these days anyway, so it's not going to really affect my profession. But I'll tell you, these young guys that are working for me, they may find they're out of clients because there's nobody left who's married to get divorced. There was an interesting guy, and I think we talked about him, and I know you've got to take a break, but there was this guy named, an author named Charles Martel. And he did a column for the Spearhead called "The End of Marriage," and in that article, he cites some pretty compelling points. He says the marriage rate is declining in the U.S. and even more so in other Western countries. Britain's the same thing's happening. In 1960, he says 66% of all 20-somethings were married. Now only 26% are. Marriage is on the decline amongst all groups, but especially low-income and low-education people. That's another thing we might want to talk about.
Well,
ironically,
wealthier
and high and college-educated people have a better chance of staying married. It's the lower education levels and the lower income that have a problem. But not only is the rate of marriage declining, but the rate of decline is accelerating. And Mr. Martel has gone so far as to predict that if the current trend continues, sometime between, in his figures, are 2028 and 2034, the U.S. marriage rate will reach zero.
Well,
go figure.
Isn't that startling? So
yeah.
We're going to go to a break, and then when we come back, Brad Coates and I will continue talking about this fascinating and maybe somewhat troubling idea or question, is marriage dead? And Brad Coates knows the ins and the outs, so stay with us and we'll talk some more. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley here with my good friend, Bradley Coates. He is divorce lawyer extraordinaire, the founder of Coates and Fry, and that is Hawaii's largest divorce law firm with some, what, are you close to 30,000 divorces now?
Probably.
That
I can document
handled over the last
20 to 25,000. I don't know if I'd go to 30, but we're headed that way, yeah.
I guess I was thinking about the 30 years that you've been doing this. You've been actually doing this for 30
over 30
years.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe close to 35 years, which 36, makes
36, but who's counting, right?
But it makes you officially old, Brad.
Don't rub it in.
Listen, I'm feeling the same way. What you and I have in common is that we have great useful attitudes, and we have fun, and we know how to have fun.
We've both been lucky enough to be in good marriages, but yes. Like I say, it's becoming kind of an endangered species. While we were on the on the break, I pulled up a couple things that out of this most excellent book, Divorce with Decency, that I wrote. I was looking at what some of the key marriage killer factors are, and I've actually got a list of a few.
And we have not discussed the connectedness craze or the explosion of internet porn. We haven't, and those are really important factors.
Let's talk about those. The first one I had on my list, so let's back up for 1 second, is the women's
sure.
movement and the rise of what they call the she economy.
Right.
And we talked about that during the first half of the show, but let me just give you some statistics on this thing that just really show how fast this has changed for women basically usurping men or outpacing men.
Uh-huh.
For every two guys who graduate from college or get a higher postgraduate degree now, three women do.
Uh-huh.
By 2009, women own nearly a third of all companies. They're the main breadwinner in 22% of all U.S. households, up from 7% in 1970. And in nearly a third of all marriages, the wife is better educated than the husband. So, you know, again, if women are inclined to be dissatisfied in the first place, now they got even more reason to be dissatisfied. Okay, so
and I must say, their expectations go up. And they're not always realistic. You know, I hear women in my practice complaining, oh, I spend all these hours working, and yes, my husband's at home with the children, but he does not measure up. He does not clean the way I would like him to clean. and so
on. You've
been
talking to my wife? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, there's no question about that. Okay, mm-hmm. let's go on to some of the other factors that are really part of the digital landscape, mm-hmm. and that is you know, how easy it is to get into other avenues rather than the old style marriage. I mean, you know, when you and I were, you know, going through college, I mean, basically, you know, this is a bit of an exaggeration, but, you know, you kind of, you know, if you wanted to have sex, you married your college girlfriend, right? I mean, that was kind of the, you know, some of us waited a few more years, but I mean, that was, you know, that was really kind of the deal. Well, now sex is off the hook, and so is mating and dating, and the internet's exponentially exploding connectedness craze has really dictated that. I mean, mm-hmm. when you think about it, in the good old days, sociologists pinned down two key factors for mate choice, which was proximity and timing. And this is worth listening to, you know, for your listeners. Think about
sure.
this, proximity and timing.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, the good old days, you had to physically meet somebody somewhere, make their acquaintance live and in person, and the timing in each person's life had to be right, right? You had to, you know, you might meet the girl of your dreams, but she was married to somebody else. Yeah, okay, well, scratch that one. Nowadays, however, thanks to the internet, both the proximity and the timing factors are eroding. Online
That's
dating
right.
has meant that proximity is now basically worldwide, and the timing is essentially immediate. I mean, I've got friends that go out to dinner with one girl and decide that, you know, that wasn't going very well, and they go back on, what is it, Tinder or something like that? That's this new thing that's like, you know, everybody knows about Match.com and all these other, even
yeah.
those are taking too long. People want immediate, they GPS and figure out whether there's somebody, you know, within 200 meters, and then they invite them to meet at Joe's Bar because they're downtown in Manhattan. It's unbelievable.
So it's unbelievable.
I mean, the yeah. timing is instant. And you can contact as many people as are on Match.com, which is thousands. So that works in favor of shorter-term revolving relationships. That, you know, essentially, it used to be that, you know, maybe you weren't thrilled with your relationship, but the opportunity cost, so to speak, of giving up on one potential mate or one potential suitor, it was a serious consideration. You know,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, God, if I leave her or I leave him, you know, am I ever going to find somebody else? Well, now you find somebody else in about 10 minutes. So you've got.
So that's the opportunity cost.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah.
There is no negative opportunity cost. You used to be you stuck with people just because you were scared of what would happen if you didn't stick with them. Now that's all gone. And that is a sweeping social change that is probably the most significant thing that's happened in society since the introduction of the birth control pill, where you could have sex and not get pregnant. That was kind of a biggie.
Absolutely.
But that was back in the 60s, and now, you know, here we are 50 years later having another really sweeping change.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's really amazing when you think about it.
It is amazing. And, of course, I personally am thrilled that Match.com was available to me, and I persevered for several years after being widowed, and you knew my late husband, Charlie. You know, that's how I met Brian, and you know Brian, too. He's now my fiancé,
hey,
but we
I,
met
I know
Match.
All your husbands and all your fiancés, sure.
But we, you know, it's obvious that Brian and I would not have met if it had not been for Match.com.
Yeah.
And we are very compatible and very happy. So I feel good about the internet dating, but I realize that lots of people struggle. I mean, just minutes ago before the show, I got an email from a client who's struggling a lot. He's 50, and he wanted me to review his Match.com profile. So, I mean, we're talking about a lot of things in our sessions, but he wanted some help with his Match.com profile, because what you write is pretty important in terms of getting potential interest.
Well, my wife discourages me from going on internet dating sites, so I'm not an expert on this. But
I wonder why.
Even Match.com is like I say, too time-consuming compared to Tinder, where you just go on and see an instant photo of somebody. You heard of that one? That's, you know, that's the newest
one. I don't know too much about it. Maybe that's because I'm
I mean, you don't even bother to write up a whole profile like you do on Match.com. You just show a picture and say, hey, I'm going to be down at Joe's Bar at, you know, 10:15. If you're interested to stop by. I mean, it's like, woo, instant.
Yeah, instant.
Okay, so you've got the,
I wonder how many one-night stands result.
Well, I mean, there is that. I mean, a lot of people seem to feel that Match.com in particular has, you know, that started as almost like a, I mean, it wasn't Christian, but it was almost a Christian mingle kind of a mentality. You find your soulmate, you're looking for your new spouse, and it seemed like it was going to be a dating and mating site where you actually met somebody that it was going to be a long-term relationship with. Now it's, a lot of people feel it's turned into like a hookup site. And people are going online with that with no intention of having a serious relationship. They just want to meet a bunch of people and roll around.
Okay, I think that what you're referring to is a little more eHarmony with a Christian aspect
than it is
Match.com. They're both really big internet sites, huge, huge. And then OkCupid comes along too as just huge.
But the question is, are these going to be real mating sites where you really find a future spouse, or are they going to be hookup sites where you go have a one-night stand?
Well, and people pick different sites for their different motivations.
Right. But again, you know, what's happened basically is you've got these infinite number of options. I mean, the option used to be if you wanted to have sex, you got married. Now the options are like, you know, off the charts. I mean, you can pick from, you know, any one of these. I mean, your point is exactly right. All these different dating, you can almost fine-tune your selection of which site you want to be on based upon which kind of relationship you want. And doesn't that tend to work in favor of revolving relationships? The other aspect of, instead of long-term marriage relationships. And then what happens when people have kids in revolving relationships that are then not going to be raised by both parents, and then you go round and round of what the sociologist is saying about, you know, is it smart to have a society where you don't have two-parent households? And, you know, we need another hour for that one. But let me go on to the other aspect of the Internet, which is totally wacky. And, you know, again, I hadn't really thought about all this stuff till I did this fourth version of my book, because the Internet hadn't come along so much for the first three. But the explosion of internet porn is totally off the hook, where you've got virtual sex replacing real-time romance. And basically, men and women no longer need each other for sexual gratification even. So you've got porn sites, mating sites, sex toys. You know, everything's more hassle-free, more user-friendly. And, you know, you can basically, you know, go online and order up your personally customized, you know, sexual desires to be delivered by professionals, you know, and you know, prostitutes and all the prostitutes advertise online. You got, you know, they say that a huge number of the postings on Craigslist are actually sex solicitation sites. I mean, you know, it's just wacky. And so you've got a situation where, you know, the genders don't really need each other as much physically, you know, one-on-one, because they can be, you know, multiples on one, and one night and one the next night. And you've got masturbation going up through the, you know, some like several 100%. I've got clients coming in all the time that are, you know, freaked because they're mainly the men. Again, this is, you know, guys are oftentimes the problem. Totally freaked out because they're convinced that their husbands are addicted to internet porn. And, you know, some of them are.
They're very compulsive about it. They watch it a lot, the guys. And they masturbate a lot watching it. And there is a little bit of evidence, and I think the jury is still out, but that chronic viewing of porn can rewire the brain.
I think that's true.
But mostly it makes a lot of men, no, some men, not so satisfied with their real-life partners. You know, they have these expectations that, I mean, one thing about the actresses who are in porn is they're always enthusiastic, and they always have orgasms.
And they're always young, and they're always beautiful, and then you turn around and your spouse is, 58 years old, and a little overweight, and wait a second, and even if you've got a spouse who's still into sex necessarily, which is, that's a problem too, is that marriage oftentimes puts a damper on the physical element, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not a problem you've ever had, I know, but that's why you're in business. You're in business helping other people through it, but it is a chronic problem in a lot of marriages.
It is. Absolutely. I see many of them in my practice, yes.
Yeah. And then, even if they're trying to have sex, it's not coming out quite the same way that what they're seeing on the porn channels where anything goes and everything goes. And, the whole expectation, your mental image of how sex ought to be gets totally warped by this porn stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a serious problem.
Well, it is. The bottom line is that porn is a really bad sex education for guys. And Michael Castleman, who's been on this program a number of times as well, has written a wonderful book called Great Sex, and it's all about male sexuality. And he says in his book, just stow away the porn and bring out the massage lotion, because whole body sex for a woman is wonderful, and getting aroused over a long 20 minutes, 30 minutes with touching and a lot of oral sex and all of these things really helps a woman feel more engaged and happy, and porn just doesn't educate a man in that way at all.
No, in fact, it miseducates him. I mean, you're exactly right. It's exactly the wrong set of expectations and guidance for guys, because, you just totally lopsides. Why isn't my wife, a 18-year-old girl in stiletto heels and silicone breasts really? But that's the problem. I mean, you get used to seeing all that stuff on your porn sites, geez, my wife doesn't look like that. Now I'm unhappy.
Yeah, and then it's also a lot easier for some guys to just masturbate in front of porn and not to have to take a shower or deal with a relationship.
Yeah.
By dinner, it's just easier. But long-term, it's not so good for these guys. I mean, I see them in my practice. It's not so good.
My wife is Japanese, and in Japan it's become a real, real problem. Again, that in Japan, the wives are oftentimes a lot more cosmopolitan than the husbands, and the husbands still rule the roost in a chauvinistic way, because they really are still the breadwinners. But the wives may stay married to them a little bit longer, but they don't really want to have anything to do with them. And the guys go to the Ginza and they drink and they go to the bar hostesses and they do the porn thing. They give up on even trying to romance their own wife, and they just find some alternate avenue. So you've really got the genders really going their separate ways in Japan, which used to be a pretty harmonious culture.
That's such a good point. And to add on to the problem, some of these guys end up having erectile dysfunction problems. They are so used to getting an erection through watching porn and touching themselves, and then when they have a partner, it isn't the same kind of stimulation that they've been used to. So it creates ED, erectile dysfunction. Yeah.
This is kind of a bad pun, but, with the porn, you get it, quote, handed to you exactly the way you want it.
Right.
Which is, if your gal doesn't touch you quite that same way, it doesn't work quite the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then you just go back to the porn, because that's easier anyway. So, it really becomes a vicious cycle.
It does become a vicious cycle. And, As a psychotherapist, as a sex therapist, as a gerontologist, I am very concerned about people's sexuality, and I know for a fact that people are so much happier when they have good sex. And so I feel privileged to do the work that I do because I can facilitate people recovering their sex lives or improving them or maybe having them for the first time. I'm actually now seeing some people in their late 20s and early 30s, and that's a result of my website, which my fiancé Brian really helped me with. It's been up about a year now. I rarely promote it, but I will now, and that's drdianawiley.com. Some of my listeners probably have already been there. But so some of my younger clients will have visited my website and see that I'm experienced and open and all of that, and they want to come and get help, and it's so much easier to get help when you're in your when you're young and make changes. It's not impossible to make changes when you're in your 60s and 70s, and I have clients like that too, but it's a little bit more challenging. So
well,
I think
the work you do is really important, and you may personally stem the tide of you know some of this is marriage or dead or our relationships dead kind of an issue. I mean, obviously mm-hmm. I think, and again I don't want to sound like you know a chauvinist pig here, but I think one of the real problems that I see constantly in my divorce practice is that. You know, women don't really realize, you know, and most of the time I've been telling them, blaming the guys and lauding the women. But one of the turnaround situation, if you want to keep a marriage together or a relationship together, is that I don't think women really understand how important sex is to guys. I mean, you know, I've had women, female clients come in and say, well, you know, we, admittedly, we, you know, I gained a bunch of weight and we sleep in separate beds. You know, something like 20% of all American couples sleep in separate beds. It's goofy that's sort of fallen off and we only do it, you know, three or four times a year and, you know, does that really justify his running around? And I'm not saying it justifies his running around, but it certainly is going to trigger it. I think that's an area where women, I think, are a little bit, unrealistic about you know the male sex drive. The male sex drive is huge.
It's huge, and
misguided.
And I point that out to a number of my couples. Every now and then, I get a couple where the guy has the lower sex drive, but that's more unusual. And I think it's not fair in a married relationship where they've decided to be monogamous and committed for the woman to expect for that her husband will be totally faithful if she's not willing to have sex. I think it's not fair. It's not right. So then my job as a marital counselor is to help the woman, and usually she is motivated by the time they get to see me, to get her sex drive up. And to bring some spice into the sexual relationship. And it's possible to do that. They have to be motivated, of course. But I just think it's not fair for a woman to expect that her man will be totally faithful when she's not willing to be sexual. Because it is so important for so many men. This is how he expresses his love, for instance. And the way he relaxes more. There are many reasons that men have sex.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like either a chauvinist or a sex addict, but it is definitely, it's got to be one of the key ingredients if you really want to have a healthy, lasting relationship. And which is a good segue for the fact that when we talked earlier, you had said that you're going to have me back on, I think it was January 20th, Tuesday the 20th
yeah.
of January.
Mm-hmm.
And we will go beyond some of this bad news about relationships and the death of marriage mm-hmm. and the difficulty of maintaining relationships, and we'll focus on some of the ingredients that really can improve relationships, which is certainly what you do, and I'm probably one of the rare divorce lawyers that tries to do the same thing. I love to turn away divorce clients and turn them into, you know, ongoing marriages whenever I can. I figure that brings me one step closer to heaven, and I need
it
all the
does,
help I can get.
Bradley, it does. Because, you know, you're really establishing very good karma when you do that. It's
That's true. I think it is
yeah.
true. And I, like I say, it'll be a fun show to do next, where we talk about some of the factors that that can really help improve your relationships and maybe defy the statistics on marriage as a dying institution. So.
Yeah, I mean, there are many reasons why relationships fail, but if you look at what drives the deterioration of many of these relationships, it's often a breakdown of kindness. You know, people just aren't very kind to each other or generous. So we'll talk about that and more in the new year. I think it'll be a positive way to start 2015, don't you?
There we go. I agree.
Yes. So, I just have loved always having you as a guest because you're so articulate and you have so much to say. And your book, Divorce with Decency, and when we finish this program, of course, I always write it up and we'll have a picture of your book on the next to my write-up, Divorce with Decency.
Oh, cool.
And your clients, anybody you know, can listen to the archived version, which will come up pretty quickly. Progressive Radio Network gets on it. If not, because it's 6 o'clock, well, right now it's almost 7 o'clock in New York. There's the music, so we have to stop. Thank you,
okay.
Bradley.
I'll be back the 20th, and if anybody enjoyed this conversation, tune in on the 20th, and in fact, tune in every Tuesday to listen to Dr. Di.
Oh, thank boy, you're good at my marketing. Thanks, Brad.
Okay.
And you and I will be in touch, and thank you, everybody, for listening, and hopefully this was enlightening. I think it must have been. Goodbye.
Aloha,
see you
everybody.
Next week. Aloha.
Happy thing, da da da, happy thing.